Well, boys, looks like you started the fun without me.
You're all sick. Every last one of you.
We're going to need a bigger gun.
What's the matter? You scared of things that go boom, boom, boom?
Give me one goddamn reason why I shouldn't blow your goddamn brains all over that goddamn wall.
My name is Eric, and today, for your amusement, I have brought forth a real, live human being, Michael Kessler.
Forth I am.
It's like an actual human. Some of you will remember these as people we used to encounter in the wild. Well, there's one right here. So
yep.
We're going to see if we can make him dance or...
Or make me sad. You can make me sad.
He'll do such tricks as dance and get sad. Here on Double Feature. Michael, we have another show today where we get to...
We almost didn't.
Yeah, let's just address what the fuck's going on right now. What's on the show? Maybe all more right. Important to answer that question this episode than ever before.
All right, so today on the show, we're going to cover two films that were featured on the South by Southwest 2020 joint with Amazon Prime. We're going to do Le Choc du Futur and... TFW, no GF.
First of all, if your movie can get a laugh out of just the title, I have had no conversation with someone about this movie where we haven't both like snickered. Mm-hmm. And usually the person I'm telling about the movie is like, wait, like that's what it means? And I'm like, yeah, it does. TFW, no GF. So I obviously want so badly to talk about these movies. And we are going to try again to not spoil the movies. We're going to talk about some stuff that's going on today in the world. But firstly, let's address something in Double Feature land that's never happened before here.
Something canonical to the podcast.
Now, if this were a prior year, I would have tried to clean this up so nobody noticed. But
I know.
I'm just going with the world.
We had, it's really funny because we've had crises that many of you didn't realize or thought was a creative scheme that we came up with for 6 months. But this week's episode is one of the few that we've run into where it was fucking deer in the headlights, like barreling train.
Yeah.
So at the end of last week's show, I announced that we were going to do TFW No GF, which has remained canonical. But I also said we were going to do a film called Motherland Fort Salem. So at the time that I announced that, which is about a week ago today, on Amazon Prime, there was a South by Southwest film called Motherland Fort Salem. It was about 82 minutes. Flash forward to literally last night when I go to watch Motherland Fort Salem in time for today's show. I go to pull it up on my Amazon Prime app. And there it is, now a series at 53 minutes. It's no longer a film, nor was it ever a film.
Yeah.
But
the Call of Duty style : title should have given that away. I always thought that was a little weird.
I thought it was weird, but there's always...
But TFW and OGF is fucking weird. So I was like, I don't know what the hell is going on with South by Southwest this year. So it's
funny because I wonder what would have happened if I had watched it a week ago. Would there have been an extra 23 minutes of content?
Yeah, right.
Or, right. I mean, I assume it was just one of a slew of fucking ham-fisted programming errors that went into trying to put one of the world's biggest tech and creative festivals on Amazon Prime for 6 days or 10 days or whatever. So we switch to Le Choc du Futur, which in English is The Shock of the Future.
Also a great title.
Great title. And that's a real film that is not a series. And so we'll cover that instead. But it is still part of the South by Southwest by Amazon by COVID-19.
Yeah. So like some of these other shows that we've been doing, I want to talk a little bit about doing a digital version of South by Southwest. And we want to talk about the movies too, but we'll try not to spoil the movies. I know it's a very limited release. So it's a little bit more of a coverage of the festival, but also that's not really fucking true.
Right.
I'm not sure what this episode is. It's we're going to roll with it.
It's TFW, no DF.
Yeah, right. Thank you. But man, these are such interesting movies too. So we do have to talk about a little of the meat of them. There's Patreon, patreon.com/double feature. You guys know what that is. There's just too much stuff to talk about on the show. So go check out the Patreon. There's some interesting stuff over there. But there are interesting things all around us these days, Michael.
The world is just full of them.
The one fucking thing that Double Feature isn't right now is boring.
Yeah.
There is just so much weird. Like we have spent so much of this year out of our comfort zone.
Sure.
Doing this weird anomaly. What is this thing? Oh, I guess we'll look at this.
Yeah.
And I feel like the show for as you know, a programming mistake and like how loose it is, we've never really just covered a festival, not since really like Music Box days of the
right.
first and second year. And I also think that even though this was last second trying to pair these up, the Shock of the Future and TFW both have this isolation thing that is very right now.
Mm-hmm.
And so it happened to be something that did feel thematically in a better place and time. You and I could have come on the show and been like, yeah, we totally spent a really long time on this double feature.
Right.
Oh, and it happens that they're both South By movies, but
right.
we're going to be honest about that instead. I'm from Los Angeles, as people will know. You are from Texas. People listen to the show.
We're both from Chicago, but I understand what you're saying.
Yeah, right, right. Well, we've been doing the show mostly from these different places.
But it's true.
The point that I'm winding up to is you are in the middle of South By every year, whether you want to be or not.
Well, I would have been, yeah.
So I think before we talk about really the contrast here, so like South By, hit me. What is that?
South By, so unlike every other music festival, air quotes, that you think of when you think of like Coachella, Lollapalooza, Reading, Glastonbury, you know, any of those music festivals, South by Southwest doesn't take place in a central place, aside from the fact that it takes place in Austin, Texas. So it's a full takeover of the city. It runs the gamut of creative. So it's not just music. It's music, it's film, it's tech and interactive. There's an education sector. It's everything. I mean, it's all the advancements in every field that is even remotely creative or anything like that. And it takes place over the course of 2.5 weeks in Austin, and the city's population triples during that time. It's a madhouse. It changes. I mean, it literally transforms the city into a different city. It might as well not be. Anybody who has only been to Austin for South By has never been to Austin. And anybody who has been to Austin not for South By has no idea. You can't even begin to imagine the city that South By creates.
Well, and the fact that it's kind of taking over another city. I mean, this is also infamously true for a place like Sundance, but you don't see an already thriving metropolis kind of replaced overnight
right.
by this festival.
Right.
What's the word? Surplants, or I suppose just
yep.
really kind of replaces the town.
Yeah. And it also funds the town,
mm-hmm.
especially starting with the service industry and the restaurant industry, but also just generally, I mean, the South By headquarters, because of COVID-19, laid off a third of their full-time employees a week after the festival got canceled. That's how much, and that was 55,000 people.
Now to kind of put a pin in where we are just in the overall map for future reference, we talked about this on a couple of these more recent episodes. We had just done one on virtual cinema,
mm-hmm.
and we did one talking about the shelf life of film on the episode we did with Contagion, Demolition Man. And, you know, we actually started this back with The Hunt and Emma talking about these. So if you go all the way back to that show, I think we declared a state of emergency like 55 days ago or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
So this has been going on for a couple months now. That's kind of the temperature for where we are
right.
within this state of pandemic.
Yeah. And I mean, I think what that takes the form of in the context of the show, but even in just the context of life, is we have begun to adapt to the lockdown.
Yeah.
Things that were supposed to exist have begun to, this is a, I mean, literally a perfect example, right? South by Southwest was supposed to happen. There was all of this cinema and film and shorts and documentaries that were supposed to be released for the first time at South by Southwest. All those filmmakers were excited. South by Southwest was excited. People like you and I were excited to see them.
It's a big deal to have your, not only to have your project play there, but even just to go there when, as a producer, I don't do a lot of traveling to festivals. I know a lot of people who produce many, many more films than I do. And that's kind of their bread and butter. They're at every festival, or they hit like maybe the big five or six, and they're just constantly traveling all over the world. But even for the very few festivals I go to that are a little more like in sort of the work-related space, these are places you go even if you don't have a film. It is a time for people from around the country and from around the world to be in the same place, to take meetings, talk future projects, showcase work. These are really, really important community times. And so, you know, this was, it was one of the big early questions, what would happen to, you know, South By is a pretty early festival. Over enough time, much like everything else with this pandemic, the sort of terrifying new parts of it seem to get monotonous. It's sort of, oh, this is what we do now with VOD releases. You know, The second we're figuring that out, it's like, oh, what the fuck is this? And here we are just several weeks later, and it's like, oh yeah, this is, you kind of watch it online if you want.
Right.
And it kind of happens with festivals too.
And it's funny because it actually sort of provides this interesting extrapolation for Shock of the Future, which is a movie about taking the status quo and going, this is not functional. We need to inject technology into it in order to create a sustainable way forward. And that's essentially what's gone on with, specifically in this case, South by Southwest, but we're going to see it with Cannes and Sundance with their partnerships with, you know, various streaming stuff like that.
Uh-huh.
And
Michael knows that I grimace every time we mention this particular video streaming sites. But they're going to be on YouTube. They're partnering with YouTube.
Yeah.
And we haven't quite figured out at this doesn't matter because people know later. But we don't know at this moment in time if that's the festival.
Sure.
Or if that's just sort of like YouTube Fest brought to you by, I don't know, Tribeca.
Yeah. We're just in a scary time because there's all these films that, and I mean, scary time for real reasons, but also scary time for dumb reasons. Like, I really want to see Candyman.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And I don't know if it's going to come out or if it's going to come out on fucking HBO Max.
It's also funny too, because in this moment, I think this is one of the things that will be lost to time, is a lot of the partnerships that were sort of locked in place for some of these bigger releases have to decide if they're going to go forward or not. So you and I have been talking about if Candyman is going to license, you know, their character to other platforms. I just saw some Spiral, the Book of Saw related things getting announced today that are, you know, toys and so forth that are coming out because they were obviously timed for the release, and it's sort of like, well, what are these companies going to hold back with? The one other thing I wanted to talk about with South By then is, okay, so the festival didn't happen in person. The idea was, well,
it didn't happen, period. Yeah.
It didn't, no, you're right. Well, I wanted to talk about the reality of what really happened, because I think history is going to say, oh, they did a digital version.
Mm-hmm.
And you and I have already talked about this, so I know that you pretty much feel the same way, but that's not the fucking truth of what happened.
Mm-mm.
The festival just didn't happen, and that's how all of these things are.
Right.
The impact that it feels to us, you as somebody who is in and around that festival every single year, and myself as somebody who's observing that and going to other festivals, it felt to both of us like there's no news. From my end,
mm-hmm.
I mean, I know obviously it's huge from your end, because if it doesn't look like the four walls around you,
right,
then there's no South By. But even like I would be looking at news releases, I would be looking at movies that came out.
It's like Comic-Con.
There's a ton of early buzz around things that'll later come out. I'm also watching who's buying the movies so I can kind of see like, oh, these companies think there's huge potential with this. This movie might come out, you know, on Netflix or something. So the thing that people should understand in the future is that when we went to pick movies to watch from the, all right, so South By doesn't happen. Amazon says, we're going to put the South By movies up. Those filmmakers then have to agree to that. It changes the, you know, the intended method by which they had submitted their films to be seen. So when we really look at the reality, I have these in front of me because we were talking about this yesterday, but there are 4 narrative features that came out,
mm-hmm.
and there are 3 documentary films. That's what's available on Amazon right now when, as we record this and are technically right. still within the festival.
And a ton of shorts.
Yeah, ton of shorts, documentary narrative shorts, and some episodic TV, all of which we see. But just in terms of...
feature length, yeah.
The feature world, because that's what I'm more familiar with.
Double featurable material.
Of things we could be talking about, right? So we have 7 things that have shown up between narratives and documentaries. Do you want to take a guess at the original lineup of feature length? How many movies they were supposed to be?
First of all, before you tell me that number and bum me out, I just want to point out that we've covered more than 25% of South by Southwest this year on double feature.
Yeah, that's pretty good. If you can call this covering, yeah.
All right, and now tell me that number. I don't know, 300.
Basically,
how'd
yeah.
I do? Yeah.
It's 125.
Oh my God.
So
we got 7?
1 to 5 of those are, you know, what you'd call headliners. So there are movies
right, like
that
King
are...
King of Staten Island, I know, was supposed to come out.
The Beastie Boys story that ended up just showing up on Apple TV. The Green Knight was supposed to be there. The Lovebirds was the big movie for South By this year. And it's not on the Amazon Prime streaming.
Mm-hmm.
You know, those movies all have to make their own choices about what the fuck to do. I'm not mad at South By. I'm not mad at Amazon. I'm not mad at the filmmakers not putting their stuff in there. But I am mad at how history is kind of, the stories being printed about South By, like, don't worry, guys, it's online. It's fine.
Mm-hmm.
And I think, you know, if you are a festival watcher or a film fanatic, or a lot of our audiences have just started getting into the festivals with us as we've been talking about them more. And it's a huge fucking buzzkill to be like, yeah. Well, it's very accessible right now. Anyone can go to South By. You just mm-hmm. go on Amazon.com. That's
right.
Not even the tip of the iceberg.
I mean, I'll say that I've watched more South By films this year than any other, though.
Silver linings, man. Silver linings.
I mean, I know I've already mentioned them, but I watched a bunch of the shorts because they're shorter than TV episodes, and I just don't have the fucking time. Like, I just don't have the attention for a 25-minute TV episode in the year of our virus, but...
There's a lot less... it's not as scary to
sure.
post your short in this way, but we talked about, you know, streaming and some of the piracy concerns.
I feel like it's the opposite. I feel like posting a short this way is the way to do it, because where else do you see a fucking short film?
Yeah, it
Eric?
Has made the...
Where do you see one?
Good question. It's made the shorts more accessible for sure. But the features, you know, we didn't even get the 5. Not only did none of the headliners show up, but there were supposed to be something like 15 competition features.
Mm-hmm.
And then another 20 or so narrative spotlight, you know, movies that are having their world premiere, or at least their North American premiere there.
Mm-hmm.
So this really just fucks up the premiere for all of these. And I think that's, we'll just consider ourselves in the Shock of the Future segment.
Right.
But I want everybody, if you did watch this movie, even if you didn't, this will be really interesting to watch if you're hearing this episode recently. Because this is a movie that, as you see it, one of the incredible parts of being at a festival... And you do still get this, I think, with a movie like this. You watch the release. Now, by the time you and I, when we weren't really watching things at festivals, even when we were huge film enthusiasts, we're watching stuff on VOD. We'll go see it if it plays, you know, in art house theater.
Mm-hmm.
For the most part, the path of those movies has mostly been determined.
Mm-hmm.
we know that if you or I know about a movie, 9 times out of 10, it's hit a certain level of, it's out of a certain level of obscurity.
Right.
But when you watch something this early, especially in, what's the cliche, these uncertain times, I have no idea if The Shock of the Future will be one of those movies that, say, winds up on Netflix and everybody watches one weekend, or a movie that nobody but you or I ever sees again.
Right. I mean, I don't even know. It's definitely, it's one of those things where it's possible that it may not even be something you and I could dig up again.
Well, some of them don't get released. Mm-hmm. That doesn't happen often, but I could name a handful really that I've seen in festivals that maybe 3 years later now still aren't. In fact, I got a little list of them that I keep an eye on and go, oh, whatever happened to this movie. But these are, you know, when you see something at a festival like this, for people who haven't gone, this is one of the really interesting parts, is you're seeing a movie that doesn't always know, most times doesn't know what's going to happen to that movie a year from now. Mm-hmm. Will it be out? Will it be with a big partner, a big distributor, a big streaming platform? Will it have, you know, fallen into obscurity? Will something else beat it to market? So we're all seeing one of these now with The Shock of the Future. And I just think it'll be really interesting to see, you know, this movie could wind up, I mean, it could really be anything. It could end up being Blue is the Warmest Color, mm-hmm. or it could end up being something that doesn't make the list of the top 2000 releases of this year, and we just won't know. Mm-hmm. I think it is really, it's really fitting. It's fitting for a couple of reasons. One, the isolation thing on the show, and also talking about this new platform idea. But I don't know if you saw, the fucking co-founder of Kraftwerk died today. Mm-hmm. Florian Schneider. And so it just seemed like a very, sort of lyrically depressing,
sure,
kind of echo here.
And it's funny too, because one of the things that may have tipped the ball into the net as far as this being the pick of the four choices we had was that this was semi-framed as being about a female pioneer in a male-dominated mm-hmm. profession, music, and specifically electronic recording at the time. And one of the things, too, with Shock of the Future is that it's written and directed by a composer. So you know that his heart is in the place of Kraftwerk, man. You know that. That's a fucking fact. I don't have to check.
Yeah.
And it's just really cool to, as somebody who, in this lockdown, in this quarantine, who's been doing a lot of trying to figure out how to do music in a way that I haven't done it before.
You're not breaking news here, are you?
I mean, I'm not going to officially break news, but you know, it's just, it's interesting as somebody who has spent my entire musical career in a room with other people working on music mm-hmm. to have to send files, you know, whizzing across the space time continuum.
Yeah. Yeah.
Into a satellite and then back down to California and try and come up with, I mean, it's just amazing how terms of creation and technological parameters create a different sound, you know? And I really liked the portion of this movie specifically where she's arguing about how rock and roll is on its way out.
Yeah,
and how it's almost the 80s and this is the future. And it's especially when it comes to like dark wave and new wave and 80s electronica, mm-hmm. something that was such a fucking flash in the pan snapshot musically. I mean, there are very few other genres of music that solely existed within a decade. And that new wave, and it's honestly, I'll tell you one thing further. There are few decades that have had that many small genres only exist than the 80s.
Yeah.
Rock and roll has transcended. Classical music has transcended. Folk has transcended. They had their primes, but the 80s, just off the top of my head, you have new wave, you have punk, and you have hair metal. and they were gone by fucking 1989, dude. Mm-hmm. I mean, they were either gone or mainstream, which is the same fucking thing for those genres.
Yeah.
And it's so cool to watch sort of from the other side of the 80s, new wave looks like this polished commercial bullshit. And it's really cool to watch the grassroots uprising of no, fuck you, drum machines are this cool, nasty way to make music.
Yeah.
And I'm like I'm in 1994 being like, yo, have you heard Nevermind though? That's just Dave Grohl hitting something real fucking hard.
Isn't it cool how when we talked about, when we talked on the Demolition Man show about like things that are timeless or things that kind of echo back, moments in music have this, you ramp up in total rebellion, doing a new thing that no one even believes will be the future. And by the end of it, you have milked it so much that, you just can't believe it ever had any artistic credibility.
Mm-hmm.
Looking at you found footage subgenre.
Stay tuned next week.
Yeah, it's really, it's any number of the movements in film we talk about too, where they start in a very genuine sort of, it usually starts in a very middle finger to the status quo.
Sure.
And so many of them end in just the pile on when you start with nobody believing. And by the end, people think, oh, that's the only way to make anything.
In contrast, you can be the first and last film to do the thing you're doing. Looking at you, Hardcore Henry. Still love you.
The other thing about this movie that I thought about a lot watching it is, for myself, electronic music, I've always thought about the history of it in a very American-centric way. I know a lot of, and some of the like European bands that came over later or whatever, it's hard to think like, oh, American-centric, and then think of like the fucking Cure or Gary Numan or somebody.
Right.
But, some of the people that I talk to who are a lot more kind of music heads, they really like, they spend night and day thinking about music the way that we do about film. They are studied in histories of genre and obscure people in the middle of, Chinese theater that invented grunge in 1201.
Mm-hmm.
What did you call it before Corona? I've already fucked up your, I was going to call that back and I had too many random thoughts flying around. But, this is a movie that takes place in Paris. It's talking about the beginning of a genre that they don't even have a word for. The best she can really, really call it is kind of disco,
mm-hmm.
which today seems crazy to think of that as disco. But when you were in that early sound and in like the pioneering days and the Kraftwerk days and a lot of these bands, obviously you don't know what the genre is the way you do when you're in the fucking middle of it. And so, my friends who know a lot more about music than me and a lot more about dark wave and these kind of movements in music are always talking about stuff like Italian disco from like the 70s. And I never, I don't even associate that sound with that place.
Yeah.
But it goes so far back. And I think it is interesting to kind of imagine what they went through the first time. The conversations you see in this, the movie's really good about showing you what you want to see. People sitting down and going, wait, so robots are going to replace people? Don't be ridiculous. You're telling me somebody would rather listen to you hit buttons on a machine. It's also funny, the echoes we see, the sort of like, you're not a musician, you just push fucking buttons.
Right. Which is funny because I can see both sides of that argument, but I'm so far in the future that I understand, fucking listen, man, I am 55 days into understanding TikTok. Creative attribution just a fucking, it's a joke. Okay.
Yeah.
You can literally never lift a finger and have created something as far as I'm fucking concerned. Right. Yeah. Now.
Well, I remember us growing up, everybody's had their moment, I think, where you go like, oh yeah, what do I listen to? Real music, not people who just push fucking buttons.
Well, dude, I'll tell you, for me, it was, what do I listen to? Real music. Or what, rather, not what do I listen to, but as a musician.
Yeah.
I was always the one where people were like, yeah, dude, I got like super stoned and wrote this song. I'm like, no, marijuana wrote that song.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, you know, I just think about all the people around me who are sort of like, no, I'm not into DJs. I'm not into electronic. I'm into real music where you hold instruments.
Sure.
And just, I'm sure every generation has that same crazy fucking thing.
Yeah, remember dubstep? There's one. There's a new one.
Oh my God. Oh my God.
Came and went.
The one other thing I'll say before we get into the next movie is that I really loved sitting down and just watching another human make a piece of fucking something.
Yeah, I agree. God, and furthermore, let me just like double props as a filmmaker who comes from a composition background, the guy who made this.
Yeah.
Thank you for having the people actually playing their instruments on screen. Just thank you.
Nice.
That's it.
Nice.
It's just as somebody who can play a guitar, watching somebody actually play a guitar, like putting their hands where they fucking should be. It's so minor. It means nothing, but just fucking thank you.
Warmed my heart, this movie. It was so much what I needed to see. Just, yeah,
I loved it.
You know, the pains
really
to like spend all the time in her room watching them write like the whole song.
Sure. And I can also tell you with certainty, one of the things that made me feel so seen and like that I related to so hard was when she was just listening to music and then she was like, I have to fucking go.
Yeah.
And everyone's like, oh, no, I'm going. He's like, no, I have to like go. Like I have there's like an idea. And if I don't get it out, I will die.
Yeah.
I've pulled myself out of bed at 4 a.m.
Yeah.
Having gone to bed 15 minutes earlier, probably, and just been like, I have to put this down. And it's just this indescribable feeling that I've never seen represented. And I feel really connected to that moment.
Yeah. It's weird how romantic the movie is in a sense. Mm-hmm. And sort of you feel the care it has around those things.
Mm-hmm.
All right. TFW, no GF. This fucking movie. I didn't know what this was, and I couldn't have been more excited when I hit play on this.
This is, goddamn. This documentary, so I had read a bit about it, but I didn't know much about it. This is one of the most challenging documentaries I've ever watched in my life, and I've seen The Internet's Own Boy. And I've seen Jesus Camp.
Before you tell me, do you think it's more challenging because of this moment where we are all stuck inside without companionship?
No.
Is that an element?
No.
Oh, interesting.
I think that provides a level of clarity, but I don't think it makes it challenging. I think it's challenging because it is... No, you're right. That does make it challenging. You're right.
Because I understand. I felt like I was watching a movie that might have benefited from everybody.
There we go. Yes. Yeah, that's what I was. Yes, you're right.
Everyone could suddenly relate to a very unrelatable thing.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. No, you're right. You're dead on. That was about, I realized what you were actually asking. Yeah. So at first, this movie seems like, when was the last time somebody anthropomorphized a fucking meme?
Oh, I know.
Ever.
Yeah.
I mean, the
kind of art
the
direction.
The Wojak, like,
this,
intro background shit. And then just, like, they keep showing, like, Wojak, like, sat on a laptop. And I'm like, man, for real, dude.
Yeah. Yeah, you have to do some work to really put people in the mindset of what only 1,000 hours of solitude on a fucking toxic message board will do to people.
Yeah, that's the thing, right? Like, so this movie it's basically like a heartfelt look at the comment section.
Yeah.
It's looking into internet trolls and meta comedy and anti-comedy and 4chan and incels and... all of this, I mean, what I think most of us would almost unanimously agree is the dregs of American, of planetary society. The comment section is where humanism goes to fucking die.
Mm-hmm.
I can't really put it any other way than that. And while I was watching the movie, I was asked what 4chan was. And I said, 4chan is if the Reddit comment section was its own website, you know, and then Reddit is if the fucking YouTube comment section was its own web. I mean, we are like so far removed from just like content and reaction. This is like sub reactions to the worst parts of content. There's just no accountability, and the anonymity just makes it more fucking cloudy and dark and weird. And then so you have to understand that this film is pointing a camera at So there are places you can shine a light that cause the bugs to scatter. This film is shining a light where those bugs scatter to. It's not just looking at, oh, here's where we're not looking. It's going, these are people that don't want to be fucking looked at. They want to be seen and they want to be felt, and they're humans, but they're not, they don't even crave the same level of companionship that you and I maybe do. They just want to be accepted as a human being. And it's when you bring this fucking coronavirus planet into the viewership, you start going like, man, like maybe this, you think of them as trolls and they're shitty people and fuck them. And then when they go, here's a profile on this guy's life, like literally handed the worst deck of cards, and then three of them were set on fire.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it's just like, fuck, dude. Like, this guy's just like, this sucks. It sucks to be this guy.
You are hearing the power of film in Michael's voice right now.
Yeah.
I mean, this is really what we're talking about is, you know, imagine a more monumental challenge than a movie trying to paint a sympathetic portrait of people who are completely written off as the worst. It's hard for me to even just come on here and say, you know, factually, objectively, the worst people, those people.
Mm-hmm.
You know, this is a movie, if you didn't see it, it's about incels. And if you don't know about incels, do some cursory reading. But we're talking about, not to too heavily stereotype, but people who've been kind of associated with like the Pepe the Frog meme.
Sure.
People who were really early on looked at as like, oh, these are the people voting for Trump.
Right.
This is sort of, I mean, basket of deplorables, pick any one of your write these fucking people off type euphemisms.
Sure.
And I think probably even a group of people that on the show, I have said something to the effect of, I just don't have time to try to understand where they came from.
Right.
Or I'm so over it. And then, you know, you hand me a film like this and my fascination is once again shows right back up.
A piece of this that was super real to me is, as a mall goth, former mall goth, I saw these people in high school.
Oh yeah, I know.
You know, like you basically, two paths diverge in a wood.
Yeah.
Right. And you either figure out how to take your contrarianism and channel that into something creative or constructive, or you go down the path of true nihilism and you languish. And it's not even a choice for you to make. It's just a choice that, like the guy says, it's a choice that fucking happens to you.
One of the things that I think is so tricky about writing about and talking about incels, and there's just, I also want to just take a moment to say, we haven't done culturally nearly enough talking about this.
Mm-mm.
Like the kind of conversations we have about it are so surface level. And if I'm upset about anything in regards to this, it's just how simplistic we make it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I don't know that I would say TFW is a sympathetic movie. You know, I could hear an argument the other way, but
sure.
Yeah, probably. But maybe it is, maybe it isn't. I don't know that I'm saying we need a sympathetic movie, but I do want to instill some nuance.
Sure.
I want to talk about this at a little bit deeper level than we have as a society. And part of the reason is when you look at these, you know, the age range on most of the people who are written about and talked about in these articles is pretty young. It is certainly younger than 30. You know, 30 seems like it would be pretty old. And there are always the moments during any of these profiles where I go, oh yeah, I knew these people in high school.
Mm-hmm.
The thing the movie is doing that makes it the most successful is probably like the intro that we got on the South By page. It is a group of people who's not even in the same age range as the people featured in this film, looking back and thinking on themselves as being an outcast. Because I think when you just look at this group as who they are today in present modern life, it's a lot easier to dismiss them then when somebody comes along and says, yeah, but don't you remember being like 22 and upset?
Right.
And suddenly, you know, when you frame it that way, I certainly don't want to say that that excuses it in any way, but that it makes it a lot more interesting to me, this question that you bring up of why did the social outcasts that we knew when we were young, you know, the people who went out and created real harm in society, seemed like a lone wolf, the occasional Dylan Klebold who shoots up a school.
Mm-hmm.
That's kind of our generation, a little older than us, where somebody from this subculture would go out and do something terrible. But when you think of incels, when you think of the people that are on 4chan, I feel like culturally they are associated with just massively committing terrible acts and existing for no other reason than to do so.
Mm-hmm.
And it is a really important question why that is, if that's true. I don't know that you necessarily see that many more, you know, what the film doesn't spend a lot of time covering is things like running over that woman
mm-hmm.
with the car or sending out, you know, fucking letter bombs or some of these more horrific things. It spends a lot more time talking about like the Twitter threats.
Right.
And, you know, the context that when you just go and look at these tweets, when you go and look at the comment section, you could ask yourself, why does it look like this? Who the fuck are these people? Why does this appear this way? But it is kind of weird, isn't it, that when you follow someone around and you get the profile of who they are
mm-hmm.
and then you see them write these fucking tweets, it kind of makes a little more sense.
Yeah. Well, and that's the thing too. Like if you go back to, I mean, we have to talk about it. You go back to Assassination Nation
mm-hmm.
and there's a character that fits this bill a little bit in that film.
Yeah.
And the fact that in that film, that character isn't much followed so that the for the lulz aspect of his being doesn't fall on top of a human, right? It has to fall on sort of this caricature.
Mm-hmm.
It's sort of interesting to watch this movie because I only see one for the lulz guy in the whole of it. Maybe not, maybe all of them to a certain degree.
That's the question, right? That's the magic. Right.
But I feel like when we get the like sort of follow-ups, I'm like, how's everybody doing? That's the most depressing point in the movie for me because the follow-ups on like, how are you guys doing today? It's all like this weird, like on one hand, they're like, I'm doing better. I'm contributing to society in a way. And then it sort of like always ends. And that's why I was saying that I don't think that this is an optimistic approach. It always ends with them being like, but I'm actually really deeply fucked up.
Yeah.
Like more deeply fucked up than before. Before the fucked upness was like surface level and I was doing it on the news. And now it's like, I'm actually just really committed to like my body image, but like I'm a fucking powder keg.
Yeah. It's such a loaded, topic. It just needs so much more examination, especially now. If people didn't think this was worth really doing more of a psychological dive into, you know, what we're talking about here is a bunch of people who were isolated or alienated for one reason or another, away from society. We see the real decay and fucking poison that I've talked about on this show before of what the way that loneliness can cripple a human being mentally and how it is creating just a factory of miserable humans, some of which who go off to do terrible things. And now we've all been inside for months. I'm just saying it might be worth looking at this. We might all need to become newly invested in what happens when we just fucking stay inside and don't talk to anybody and isolate. Because while a lot of people at this point in the good old quarantine have figured out their appropriate balance of when do you go out for a run and it's safe and how often can you go to the grocery store and what does your FaceTime schedule look like with all your good friends and relatives and your happy hours and your group yogas. And, you know, I'm paying a lot of attention to that stuff too, but there has to be a higher than usual number of people who are inside struggling being alone for the first time, maybe. And I can't imagine, you know, if you look at TFW NoGF as a thing that happened, you know, some small subsection of society, that problem's not getting any better as a result of where we are right now. I guess I have a concern that we don't look at it a little more. We don't look at it a little deeper. It's, you know, it's hard for me in this movie because you talk to these guys and it is sympathetic in a way and you follow them. And then there's a whiplash I feel when, like, you see the tweets and it's like, I just want to punch a woman till she collapses.
Mm-hmm.
And immediately I go from like, oh, a fellow human. Oh, they are also trapped indoors. So this must be a very difficult time for them. Oh, I'm sympathetic. You know, I was young and didn't find my place in life and blah, blah, blah. When you and I met, I was in the middle of fucking Illinois in a cornfield talking to nobody. And then I see the tweets and I'm just like, oof.
But... And let me just do classic double feature move. Let me open a can of worms that we have no possible time frame to resolve.
Shake it up before you open it and then run away.
Somebody says, I want to punch a woman so hard she collapses. And then you go, what do you call that? And they go, the aristocrats.
I love that you open this talking about anti-humor. It just frames this in such a positive, acceptable way. We're all going to make it, guys. Don't worry. I love that one guy gets a girlfriend and that's his out.
Sure.
That's another thing not discussed in this movie is this is like a self-created support group of these people.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, if you look at people who claim the title involuntarily celibate, the odd thing about it as a support group, if you do take it the way that they kind of think about it, is that the second one of them gets a girlfriend, they leave the group.
Right.
And so, you know, it's the nature of a support group where there is a singular goal, get out of the support group.
Mm-hmm.
Sorry, I'm just opening more worms. Website is doublefeature.fm. It's patreon.com/doublefeature. I get a magic list. Listen up to this list. Tell me if you notice something about this list.
Uh-oh.
I want to thank Abbott of Unreason, Charles Crawford, John, Tom Leonard. Those are the executive producers of Double Feature. Guys, we've got new executive producer slots. Race over to the website as you hear the sound of my voice. And you can sign up and I will commit your name to memory. I'll come up with a mnemonic device. I'll just write it down and read it every week. A big thank you to our executive producers and everybody who listens to the show. All right, the moment's arrived. What are we doing next time?
You didn't change it. So no. Next time on Double Feature, we're going to do some classic DF. We're going to do a deep dive into an auteur. And honestly, it's a very topical one for 2020 because the last thing that happened in cinema ever was Parasite. So
I didn't want to do a double one director. You know that phrase, the spirit of the phrase is something like, you know, showing up as half the battle.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so you showed up today. You had an idea. Pretty good idea. And I was like, no, here's a better idea. I don't have a pair for it, but I got a better idea. And our conversation was sort of like, well, okay, then show up and, you know, present your better idea. Mm-hmm. And here we are. And, you know, the world's just very hard right now, guys. It's all I could do to just show up and do the show. That's the promise that I committed to. I do not have a better pairing to lure people in. So I just need all you guys to listen to the next episode. I was trying to give it a marketing hook. It didn't happen.
Yeah.
So just help me out here and show up and listen. Anyways, that would be really great.
So next time on Double Feature, we're going to do Barking Dogs Never Bite, a Bong Joon-ho film. It's his first narrative film, I believe. And then we're going to do one of his more popular, more acclaimed films that aren't necessarily quite in the Western ethos, and that is a film called Mother. And that's what I got for you. You know, go get angry in a comment section or something. Say something fucked up.
Don't do it. It's not worth it. Write a letter of gratitude.
Watch more fucking film.
Bye.
This program is a proud member of the Battleship Pretension Fleet.